So I've gotten a lot of advice because I took creative writing classes in college. I have a minor in it, and one of the best ones and ones that I'm very much a believer in is just you have to get words down. You can sit there and try to think the best thing, or you can keep on going back and editing over and over, but you just need to keep writing, because you're never going to complete the book. If you keep on editing over the same couple chapters, it's never going to go anywhere. So you just have to get writing down, because a great book is made in editing. It's not made in the first draft. So you just have to get something down, and you can make something with that.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything lit RPG, progression fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi, and welcome everyone to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that records a episode about harvesting in March. With me today is Josh Retu,
Hello.
who has seen me fumble through about maybe 2 minutes of attempted lines, but I think that one was actually pretty good. So, hi and welcome. How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. So, tell me, is there a Billie Jean, and is it your lover?
How are we sitting on that for?
That one actually planned you, but usually I really come up with them as I go. You
Yeah,
just kind of
fair enough.
evolve.
I'm sensing a theme here.
I'm gonna harvest this thing for all I can work for all it's worth. Yeah, sure.
I should have expected that, yeah.
You should have foregene that. Anyway, let's go. Podcast time. So you wrote Gene Harvest. Why and how and everything.
So, well, the how is a lot of ignoring other responsibilities and everything else and just writing. There was, yeah, that's probably not a alone in that one, but the why, there's definitely a lot of reasons. I obviously, if someone's going to put time into something, there should be many. But I'm also going to be referring to my notes here just because my memory is a sieve and it will forget everything. So, but yeah, so like one of the big things is I'm a huge fan of the genre. Obviously I'm writing in it, so I have to, you would hope I'd at least be somewhat aware of it. And even though I loved it, there was definitely some other things that I wanted to do, certain things I didn't see, and I wanted to put my own spin on it. And it was like, yes, I love this, but this it could also be this. And because one of the big idea, like one of the main things I had going into the story and what I want to do is like he's just the main character is a good person. He's not for like he's not a murder hobo. He doesn't just go around killing indiscriminately. Like he succeeds because he is a good person. And I like, of course, there are very many other books where main characters are good people, but like it's, I wanted that to be the thing that his success hinged on. And I didn't really see that anywhere. And I wanted, and it was because it gave more of an opportunity to have character progression there, especially because I find it significantly more interesting to see a character get pushed to extremes rather than starting there. As in like they're not started off being just this expert in fighting and they're able just to do whatever it needs or whatever needs to be done, but someone who you see the progression of it and someone getting pushed to where they are, like just a regular good person gets pushed to where they have to kill people. And and the impact that has on someone, and I find that just a lot more interesting. And
Yeah, character progression in my lit art, in my progression fantasy.
yeah,
What a bold choice. I'm kidding, of course, but
no, evidently.
yeah.
Your book sitting at 4.6 stars and 252 ratings. That's 4.6 stars and 252 ratings more than I have. So I think you're good.
You know, it's the thing is that there's been a lot of really nice comments. I've gotten a lot of people say how much they love the main character. They love the development. But there, I've gotten a lot of people saying they hate the main character. They hate that he's just not like gung-ho about murder and stuff like that. And it's, to each their own. Everyone has their own tastes. And this one's mine. And evidently, some people like that. So,
yeah. So you basically wrote the book in order to, you know, try something new. It is very, very hard to actually have character progression in this, genre, because I just had a second character podcast with, people that, you know what they're talking about, unlike me. I'm kidding, of course. But, Maxime and... Raven's Dagger, and we all talked about the same thing. We all circled around the question of like, how do you actually grow a character in lit RPG and not have him start out as you know, it's Monday, better go killing. So how was your answer to that? How did you kind of do this?
Part of it is that I went the more traditional route of just writing a full book and then going with that, so I didn't have to. It's a bit more of a I think when people go into a full book, there's a lot more of like a commitment of seeing where things go. It's not like you don't have to hook people within the first couple chapters that you would in a place like World Road. So I was able to develop, like, I had the time and the chance to develop that through more of a full length novel rather than having to make something that can, like, I guess hook someone or to get like the full understanding of what's going to be happening in the series, because you like in like a couple chapters on Royal Road or something like that. And part of it is it ties a lot. One of the ways I'll say we'll do it is that it ties into his powers and that kind of thing, in that as they develop, he's also developing and figuring out where he's fitting into everything. And part of the magic system that I have is that it's a bit of like self-actualization type thing of where people, like, there are classes, there are like complete spells that you can like buy a spell book that teaches you how to do this specific thing, but it's all just it's a framework, and the specific points within is different. So it gives people will develop, like, their powers are developing in a way that they want, in a way.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Do you want to generally talk about the plot a little bit more?
Yeah. So I'll start off with, I am horrendously bad at describing my own work, because it's always like, it's this thing. But then there's also like these five things attached to it. And whenever people ask, like, what is the book about? I just show them the blurb, because,
it's hard, because you don't want to tell too much, but also, you know, like, if only there was like a show where you could, you know, talk about your book as much as you wanted.
Fair enough, yeah.
Give it your best shot.
So it revolves around the Game of Souls, which is a death match style or death game style thing where the Galactic Imperium, this like world like universe spanning corporation, goes from planet to planet to get them ready for integration, and the Game of Souls is, it brings people who are about to die into the game, and if they survive, they get put back into their bodies with these powers so they can survive those events, and they're now stronger to help protect the planet against any other corporations or whatever or other groups or anything that come in. It just gives them a first line of defense, and at least that's what they say. The book begins explicitly with so you have the introduction from the Galactic Imperium, and then it immediately goes into where the creator of the system, a Eldritch entity named who calls himself Dave, is tasking the main character Benny White with helping to destroy the system, because he created it, but the Galactic Imperium is now using it to exploit planets, and the only way that Dave can see to stop this is to destroy the system.
That's like very cool. Like, I'm not just saying that that's a very cool plot idea because I wanted to write something like that, but I'm really happy that you did, so I don't have to.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's just, there's no truly original ideas. It's all just your own unique take on it.
Nothing new under the sun. That was true modernity, and it's way more true now. We all just recombine things, and I do think that's actually a pretty good combination, right? So you have this corporation, you have the Imperium. That's this bit of you know, ultra capitalism in there. That's fun, and of course, Benny's power is of course tied to genes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you wear other pants too, or is it just genes?
That's just genes. It's like. His powers just all go away and becomes a regular human once he just puts on anything else. It's so khakis or no go.
I'm pretty sure you rejected the title Lederhosen Harvest.
That was runner up actually.
Yeah.
His part of his power system is it revolves around genes, because it was like a coming together of like, I love the trope, I mentioned it earlier, but like, I love the trope of good guy with evil powers. I don't know why, but it just makes me so happy. And so a power system where he pulls like genes that can give him spells, body parts from corpses and stuff like that, can take him away, put him in himself, and gain those things. That just sounded like a lot of fun. And then I have a bachelor's degree in microbiology, but I currently work in biophysics, whole other thing. But I love one of the classes I love was genetics. I like that stuff's always very interesting to me. So being able to tie more like a magic system to more of a bit of a scientific lens, I thought was also be very interesting.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, let me just say, like, the system certainly isn't generic.
Do you have a list of these that you're just going through? Or they...
I'm coming up with them on the spot. There's a song by Ratatat that started 17 years. You know the one?
I don't think so.
It starts off with, like, I've been rapping for about 17 years. Okay, I don't write myself anymore. I can do that. No disrespect, but that's how I am. And for me, it's the same with puns. I've got brain damage. I can't stop myself. So there you go. Like, this whole podcast, you might think it's about books and about Lit RPG and writing and learning stuff about, you know, other people's works, but really it's just about me finding a large enough group of people I can flick puns on. This is my diabolical plan. Like you said, good guy, evil powers. Anyway.
And I guess exploitation also wrapped in there. And
Yeah,
we think we're coming on here to have a nice podcast, but we're just being exploited.
Would you be interested in writing a Lit RPG about a power system that revolves around puns?
I'm actually surprised there hasn't been one, like a bard character.
How would you do that?
I mean, it would have to go the route of something like, have you played much D&D, at least 5e?
A little bit.
So the bard class in there, they have like their main... So I never played the class, but one of their spells is cutting words. So the whole thing is supposed to be just you say something mean to someone and it deals psychic damage to them. So it has to be something like that, where just using enough puns and the strength, like the how good they are, it deals more psychic damage.
There's this series called Devil's Foundry. It starts with Be Thou My Good. It's a bit underrated, I think. I think it's an issue. Pretty good thing. It's an isekai story about evil supervillain and her nemesis are getting isekai'd to fantasy land, and they have to kind of grow out of there. It has a bit of a darker tone sometimes. So like there's stuff like, you know, like abuse and kind of all the fun things that go on in a fantasy world or medieval world where there's no policing force. they're being discussed and they're not being glossed over either. Not graphically, but still they're being discussed. And sometimes that's a bit of a weird vibe, but I do really like the series. Not just because I like power armor, but yeah, anyway, the deuteragonist, all the classes are made of puns. So the main protagonist, her class is a demogog because she can talk to demons. And she has like a sidekick whose class is Filet Minion. So, and she also has cutting words, which is why I thought about that. So,
yeah.
So, then, again, mincing words. Mincing words. Those are different.
Oh, okay. But yeah, still comes back to the whole no original ideas. Someone's done it somewhere. You just kind of have to try and do it uniquely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, still, I'm not quite sure I'm ready to inflict a pun based system on the world yet. But maybe in a few years.
But you're building up to it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. We'll get to it. Yeah. But in general, we are actually at a good point to let me ask you this. What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
So I've gotten a lot of advice because I took creative writing classes in college. I have a minor in it, and I had over 7 semesters of it. And so there's a lot of advice thrown around, but it's probably two parts to that, or not two parts, but two, I guess, separate things. But the one of the best ones, and ones that I'm very much a believer in, is just you have to get words down. Like, you can sit there and try to think the best thing, or you can keep on going back and editing over and over, but you just need to keep writing. Cause you're never going to complete the book. You're going to be if you keep on editing over the same couple chapters, it's never going to go anywhere. So you just have to get writing down. Because you can, like, the best books are always made in the, like, a great book is made in editing. It's not made in the first draft. So you just have to get something down, and you can make something with that. And that goes back into the part of why I really like more the editing process, is because there's that framework there. There is something, like, the main ideas are there, and then I could just go back through and flesh it out and add additional things and tie it into other details that are happening. So yeah, that's why, like, when so many people are one of a lot of authors are saying, oh, I'm in editing hell right now. I'm like, man, I wish I was in editing hell right now instead of just trying to churn out another like 40,000, 50,000 words.
Because to you, it feels as though the book is only really done when you're done with that, right?
Because like my first draft was so rough, and I am so proud of what it became, but it became what it is through the editing and through having just gotten stuff done on it. Yeah. But and then the actual second part of that is just that there's no true original ideas. Like, that was I had written that down, and but yeah, there's no true original ideas. There's always going to be someone who does something similar. You just have to put your own spin on it. Like, the two big examples I have is I wrote and submitted my story to Aethon and Portal. And while I was waiting to hear back, Actus released My Best Friend is an Eldritch Horror. And I'm like, wow, yeah, I just, my story has the whole thing of just the Eldritch Abomination. And it's just like, oh, great. So there's that. And then when I was pretty far into the writing process too, I was listening to one of the Primal Hunters, and main character gets, I guess, spoilers, but gets, yeah, I don't know how to, I know some people are against it, but yeah, so just gets like blood-based toxins, stuff like that. And that was something I'd already been using. And I was like, part of me was like, do I try and scrap this? Cause it's now not original thing, but like, there's not going to be any original, truly. It's going to be extremely hard to come up with like truly unique idea. But even then, it's just one part of a much larger whole.
Oh yeah, totally. Famously, Brandon Sanderson stole many of my ideas and wrote them first.
I mean, that would explain how he writes so much.
Yeah, totally. He just steals ideas out of my college classes. Totally. No, I think I told the story before, but he did this like 3 times. The first one, I was like, hey, you know what would be cool? Fantasy world, but with power armor. And then I read Stormlight Archives. I was like, God damn it. So the second one, I was like, okay. Hear me out. What if it's superheroes, but they're all evil, and it's a secretary who's the main character? And then I was like, Reckoner series, like, God damn it, Brandon. And then the last one was like, okay, I have one more. Okay, hear me out. What if it's Train Your Dragon, but with a hover tank? And then I write Skybound, and I was like, Brandon! But I'm really happy he wrote all these books, because now I didn't have to write them anymore. And actually, I had like, ideas are cheap. You always have more ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And you said like there's nothing new under the sun, but that's not quite true, because a book is more than the sum of its parts. Like Eldritch Bestie is nothing like your book.
Mm-hmm. Right? But yeah, it was. Yeah, it was, because it was like, that's what I said. It's like, it's just one part of it. And like, I thought I was being very unique with this, but it's just, no, but like the book didn't hinge on that one idea. And I think that's part of the problem, is when people come up with that unique idea and everything hinges around it, because if that one element doesn't work, then the whole thing doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. No, I mean, in the end, it's all just people wanting to do things. And other people not wanting them to do those things, and then, or the universe or whatever, and then them overcoming that or not. That's the story.
Yeah.
But your other advice, I really resonates. I've learned so much from finishing a book that I've never learned in all my years of not finishing books and editing them to death until I can no longer, write them.
So, yeah. Cause there's certain things, because my problem a lot with writing when I was younger was I always came up with this great idea, and there was this one scene that I had in my head that was like that I would want to build up to, but I would write that scene and be, oh, now I'm going to go, so I wrote the scene that I want to, now let me build everything beforehand. And then the thing that I wanted to do was already done. So I lost interest very quickly.
Uh-huh.
But now, one of the things I learned with finishing a book is that the best way for me to write is just to write consecutively and just sequentially, and just writing it as what happened. And because a lot of the times those really cool ideas, they end up not working out the best. And there are many other paths that end up working out better. That it could come from just through naturally writing. Like the series name of my book is The Crimson Hydra. I didn't think of attaching Hydra-esque powers to them till halfway through. And it became like, that was not part of my plan, but I suddenly went, this is a great idea. Let me go down this path, and it ended up working out. And
so at the beginning of your book, you were hydrophobic?
No, I was hydrophilic, because there's hydras in it. I wasn't against them.
Not in the beginning.
I wasn't against them at any point.
Yeah, it's all Hydra Ball anyway, so let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can see where this podcast is many-headed. Anyway.
Uh-huh.
I just had to snake it in there, sorry.
Yeah, I caught that one too.
I thought it was. I thought that I will need to edit this out, but I thought that slithered past you. But
yeah, sadly, it did not.
No, it's okay. It's
okay. Where
puns?
Yeah, that's it all comes back to puns. That's
just... No, we were talking about finishing books.
And
how that's good, because it teaches you things that you usually wouldn't do. I have friends who have been planning books for ages, and another thing I wanted to talk to you about is that pantsing, in some regards, is literally just writing one huge outline.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, because when you, because it's as it ties into the idea of just a book is made in the edits, and like you're able to, it's like one of those things that Neil Gaiman said, that like a lot of his writing with how, and he was asked, how do you write foreshadowing and have something like that? And it's just, you add that in edits. That's not done the first go around.
The entire quote is like, foreshadowing is what happens when you go back, when you finish the book, and then you go back and make it look as though you knew what you were doing the entire time. Mm-hmm. It's such a good quote.
Yeah, because it's just part of, a book, you like, it'd be a great skill to have, to be able to like do the right thing on the first go around, but you learn a lot about the story as you're writing it and as you're going through, and you're just able to add in those details to build to a payoff once you know where the payoff is going to be. And as someone who, nicer term is discovery writer, but I always say pantser, as someone who's a pantser, I don't know, I may know where the payoff is going to be, but I don't truly know until the book is done.
Yeah, I still don't quite know the end to the series, right? Because I deliberately don't, so I keep interest in the book. It's something else you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very easy to lose interest in a book, and I've started so many books just because and dropped them because in college, like I had, classes got busy, I didn't have the time to work on it. So then I moved on to the next thing eventually once things eased up. But yes, it helped build my prose and got me learned how to write, but it doesn't teach you what to write.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you only truly get that once the book's done and you're in the editing process.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even as a plotter, you have to write sometime. And you can, as much as you can edit a book to death at the end, you can also plot it to death, I think. And then
I've known some people who's like, all the more power to them, but like, I've known some people who've been like world building for 10 years and just everything is like detailed out, like to hundreds of years in the past history and stuff like that. And like, that's great. And if it's just something you want to do for yourself, or like you're building towards like a D&D campaign or something, like, great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. But it's when they've expressed that they want to write this book and to make it something. And it's just like, when are you going to write it?
And there's a few programming rules that are applicable to writing too. And one of my favorite ones, when it comes to plotting or rope building, is Yagni. Ya ain't gonna need it. I'm not making this up. This is a real thing. And so there's so much temptation. If you've written like this world Bible that's like 5 gigabytes big, to also use it, right? Mm-hmm. Because you've done the thing. To be honest, I don't even think Tolkien did that. I think Tolkien kind of was like, you know what? I'm going to get inspired. I'm going to write some stuff down. And yeah, of course he did the language. But it was that's all like embellishing he put on at the end, right?
I do know this. He actually, if I remember right, the story was just to give him an excuse to use the language. Because I think he was like that.
Oh, right,
like,
yeah.
That was the first thing he made, was the language.
Wasn't there also like some rumor that he started The Hobbit as a story told to his kids?
Yes, I have heard that, although I am one of those weirdos who likes fantasy and I've never read Lord of the Rings, so there's only...
Yeah, I've started reading it wasn't really for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. I mean, maybe I could try it again, but like I really clocked out at the part where he starts describing trees. I mean, that's like very infamous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that could be part of the part of where people who might have things very much planned out is they have this whole world that they want to show and that they've written, and it ends up becoming so focused on, oh, look at my world, that the story kind of goes on the wayside.
Yeah. And you also have to be careful about what you tell when. I had this series that I really liked where a protagonist had a thought about something that happened before she got isekai'd. Mm-hmm. And then that thought turned into like a 3-page explanation about some stuff that happened to her and how it impacted the galactic market, like before she even got isekai'd. I'm quite sure that that he or the author kind of tied things together at the end and kind of made it so, okay, it's not really isekai, it's just like a time travel story or something like that. But at the time, it was in the middle of dialogue, and it literally started with like, what do you think about this? And then like 4 pages later, it's like, we should do it. So that's always the danger of having too much, you know, knowledge about your world.
Yeah, it's very easy to shoot yourself in the foot when it comes to pacing, because it's like you have this cool idea that you want to add, but that's one of the things that happened a lot with my own book, was that it went from 119,000 words submitted to Portal, then it went when it was published, it was at 197 ish, and there were some moments I had to get cut down because it was just like, yeah, like this is a great idea and all, but it's just still too much. It was like just kind of doing the same beat over and over, and it takes away from pacing very easily. And it's just very easy to get lost in this, like, hey, great idea, let me get this down, but is it actually needed to make a good story? Maybe not. It may be fun, but it may not help build a good story.
Yeah, or it just destroys the pacing, right? Mm-hmm. Right, because maybe it does need to be told in this way right now, but it doesn't need to be told this way. Can you do this shorter? That's something I'm still learning, right? Because I mean, 250,000 words is a huge book, and I am quite sure I could have shortened that.
Although part of the other aspect of that is that big books do a lot better in this genre. So
yeah, that's quite true.
That's quite true. You have to find that middle ground.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, like in the end, again, it's my first book. I still love it, but we're gonna see where it goes. I'm almost done with a rewrite, so we'll see where it goes.
Good luck with that.
I mean, we're talking about editing, so you know what time it is. That's right, it's a new ad, and this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero. It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one, so go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. What's one thing that you would say, like, hey, I want to go back and change that or do it differently?
It's hard because I've read through that book so many times and written and like done so many edits on it, that it's hard because I've made so many changes on it. I've kind of made all the ones that I wanted to. There's a couple like small things here and there, but for the most part, I did do the things that I wanted to do. There are certainly things going forward that I'm going to do differently. Oh, I guess maybe not so much editing thing, but if there's one thing I could do differently, just overall would just be make backups of my character sheets and don't just use one document. Cause then if you have to go back and go enter it, like put in a character sheet, you're not going to know what the hell the stats are or anything that's there. And it's very frustrating to be like, okay, 50 pages before these were his stats, he's gotten 5 levels, gotten a bunch of items, now what do I do?
Yeah, and then you have to go through that thing. Yeah. Then do that. You're writing the second book right now, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I'm writing the second book now. I'm maybe 3/4 of the way through, I'm at 160,000, and my issue is that I am about to, there's one more arc that needs to be there, so there's probably gonna be another 50 or 60,000 words at minimum, probably.
Nice.
And yeah, and it's hard because I want to get something out there a little bit faster, because that is you do better in the sphere when you have a bit more, when you're a bit faster at these things. But it's also just hard because I have a lot, everyone has a lot going on outside of the writing, and unless you are having this as your full-time day job, it's if anything goes wrong in your life, anything happens, that has to be the thing that gets pushed to the side. And it's rough, because it's like, I have a story, I want to write it, people are asking for it, but time is hard.
Also, even if you write a lot, or if you do it as a day job, there's so much involved that's not writing with writing. Mm-hmm. Just today, I spent 4 hours on Discord talking to people about my book, basically, and getting really cranky that no one appreciated my art. And then at the end, kind of grumbling and rewriting and stuff. But that's also part of writing, right? It's not putting words on the page, but it's writing.
Yeah, that's one of those things that I think there's a lot of issues with traditional publishing. But one of the things that traditional authors have advantage of is that they don't have to do marketing. They might have to do a book tour or whatever, but they don't have to go into Facebook groups. They don't have to spend the time doing that.
The big ones.
Yeah. That's fair.
If you're Neil Gaiman, you sign a new book, you have your fans doing a marketing for you, right? As soon as you're big enough, you get your own orbit, no pun intended here, but your entire mass, Brandon Sanderson had to keep his books secret so that no one, promoted them. And he just mentioned it, and then people were like, oh God, it was all of the internet. So,
Yeah, I guess the one difference would be is that at least if you're publishing to some extent with more traditional, it's going to get into bookstores, because that's the hallmark of traditional, and that is some exposure. At least it's something. When my book released, I couldn't end up writing. I wasn't in a headspace to write for two weeks, 3 weeks, because I was having to put so much time into marketing. And my normal way I interact in most of my life is to avoid social interactions. I am a hard proponent of self-checkout. I hate going to my hometown, because I'm like, what if I run into someone I know?
Oh no.
And now, so then with marketing, I released the book and I started doing the marketing, and I just uploaded some stuff while I was at work. And at a certain point, I was shaking, because I was just so overwhelmed of just 150, because we gave away some Audible codes for the book to get people interested. And there was just hundreds of comments and being like, oh, hey, can I want a code? Or this sounds interesting. And I was trying to write it all while still having to do my day job. And I was just so overwhelmed with it. So for 2 weeks, I just couldn't write, because it was so draining.
Yeah, that for sure. I mean, on the one hand, it's really good, because
it feels a bit bad complaining about interest in my book, but still, it's
how dare they? How dare they like the stuff that I've written? I mean, sometimes though, especially if you're not on a railroad, especially if you're not doing the promotion thing and the web serial thing. Sorry, I should say, it's all right. Because you do have 2 weeks to spare. And yes, of course, it would be great if you had brought a new book out this year, sure. But I mean, look at, for example, at Benjamin Carré. He certainly had other priorities last year. People were very understanding, right? And also his books are just really darn great. They're doing great too.
There is another side of that too, though. might be jumping the gun a bit on this, but like one person that I always try to recommend reading, I mean, it's a bit biased because he's published under my publisher, but Peter Hackshaw's books, the Nether Day series, book one was a number one bestseller in many different of the different genres that it got published in, and it did really well. It book two released, and because he had to take a lot of time off because of personal reasons, book two didn't get anywhere near what the first one achieved. And I that frustrates me because he's such an amazing author. Like his writing, I cannot say how great his writing is. So I'm mainly a Audible listener. I audiobooks stick better in my head, and I can do other things because now whenever I read, I'm feeling guilty because I feel like I should be writing. Every author I've talked to says the same thing.
My trick is actually finding books that you really like to read, where you don't have anything to kind of, I mean, we're all writers. Most of us are writers because we're like, hey, I have something to say. I can do something better than this or that. And if I have a book that where I'm just like, hey, I'm really enjoying this, it's way easier for me to go like, okay, this is fine if like the dialogue is a bit stilted or whatever. Because sometimes it's hard getting through these books because you're like, oh, why did you do this here? Why is there like this doubling of this word? So that helps with reading, but still having an audiobook is better. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, because especially because like when I'm at work, I could just listen to it while I'm doing other things. But yeah, so I was very invested in Peter Hackshaw's book, the Nether Day series. Like I was very invested. I love the story, but there were so many times where I would just want to listen because I would want to hear his prose. It was just so extremely well done, and it's not something you get to see a lot in the sphere because. Mm, it's just the writing skill, and I love that. And it was really frustrating to hear that that it didn't do well because it had so much time between book one and book two. So there is it can swing both ways.
Yeah, I also think that like it's listed as Nether Die on the second book is called Nether Die on Amazon, and the first one's called Shadow Sect. So people might not have made a connection, right? Mm. That's my take on it. But yeah, you're completely right. It has like 10% of the ratings, which is oof. Because I've heard very good things about Shadow Sect.
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. And again, like really, really great story, but again, like it could just be the author in me, but like it was so from the craft standpoint, it was amazing. And like I feel bad saying it, but like so his book, I think it released end of last year, and it has 180 something ratings.
Yeah.
And I released last month a debut book, and I have 260 something ratings.
Oh.
And it doesn't feel right. And it just, that's kind of a pitfall that can happen where if you don't keep up with it, it's very easy just to kind of get pushed to the side.
There must have something else. Something else must have gone wrong because I can't believe that. Like for example, if you're looking at Death, Loot, and Vampires, right? That came out like beginning of last year. Now there's going to be a new one that's going to come out soon. Like I'm just thinking about it because I mentioned Ben earlier. I think that's going to like sell pretty well too, because I think something else must have gone wrong with Nether Die.
I think part of the reason those I forget the author's names who did Death Root Vampires and
Ben Cray.
What was it?
Benjamin Cray.
His books were narrated by Travis Baldry.
Oh yeah.
So any that is going to, no matter what, people are just going to listen because it's Travis Baldry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Maybe. I'm just trying to like kind of like justify this somehow because the cover's great, the blurb's great. You're right. It's a bit disheartening.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it also part of it is also just I've spoken to Peter Hackshaw. Mm. He's an extremely nice guy, so it doesn't help that I also have that personal element there. So yeah, any time in any of the Discords or Reddit threads or on Facebook, someone's asking for recommendations, that's one of the series I always push. And it also works is because I can recommend that series to people who are more of just a fan of regular fantasy, because it's not lit RPG. So it's has a bit more of like widespread appeal. Because you don't have to explain things going into it, because so many people ask, like, oh, what's the book of, like, my book about? And I have to be like, oh, okay, so what do I explain first?
RPG, like, yeah. Yeah. You feel a bit like CrossFit vegan? Like, what do you talk about first? Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, like my girlfriend's family, they've been asking, like, I'll check it out whenever it comes out. And her mom's listening to it, and I'm like, I don't think her mom's like even viewed any like games at all. And it's like, so this whole thing in that, or like her grandmother was saying, I like fantasy, I'll read it. And I'm like, I don't know if that would be a good idea. And
why not though? I mean, the idea of being hunters and gatherers and seeing things stockpiled and numbers going up is very much universal in human culture.
Yeah. I part of it is that kind of pervasive idea that's still around today, that like video games are just not art, and kind of like a lot of people still think they're like a waste of time and stuff like that. And
I think you can give people your book and let them figure it out themselves, right? Because I mean, give people all the skills, right? Mm-hmm. The book.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I would love to give people all the skills. I would take them myself. But that's a pretty darn good fantasy book, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend that to people who haven't read Edit. I would have given that to people who don't like lit RPG or games, right? So why not yours? Oh. Did your grandma read this book?
Her mom is reading it, and it's just so funny that one of the comments she said is like, I work in like certain part of, I forget exactly what the comment was, but something along the lines of, I know what this term is, like I know what UI is because of my job. And it's like, there's a
good, nice.
Yeah. And cool. But so I definitely appreciate it. But yeah, it is more niche, so it loses a bit of widespread appeal. I mean, I think it's one of those things where that's how it at least is viewed. I almost think that lit RPG should be very easy for someone to enter, because everything is literally written out for you. You have the spells. Like, it says what they do. And I know I did my best with my book to make it as accessible as I could be, because like the intro for my book, I know it's the thing that probably got Portal to like really like pay attention. But it's written essentially in the voice of a used car salesman and a game show host.
Wait a second. Wait a second, because there's the truck backing up. Okay, so sorry, you were saying the intro.
Yeah. So yeah, the intro. It's written in the voice of a used car.
Jesus fuck
you. it's still going.
And on your side too, I could mute myself.
I don't hear it on my side, if that helps at all.
Now you can go. Try again.
Okay. And this gives me another attempt to say that word, because I can't seem to speak today. Used Jesus. Car salesman. At least they're consistent.
I mean, I might actually just leave this in, because if you're hearing some truck backing off in the background, that's on Joth's side. And we have tried to actually get him to stop and then talk again three times so I don't have to like fiddle some things here, but cool. Now let's try again for the fourth time. Maybe that's a charm.
Okay, so it's written
just say car salesman and we'll see if it happens.
Used car salesman.
I think we're good.
Okay, and I also said it right that time. Okay, so written in the voice of a used car salesman and a game show host, and the whole thing is that it's being given to everyone who is being pulled into the game of Souls, and I use that as a great way to explain a lot of the details, because this this corporation who goes from planet to planet, helping integrate them or get them ready for integration, people aren't going to know any of the details. So I explained a lot of the things because I guess diegetically would kind of work here. But diegetic is like in world. So if it's like music is playing in like a show, if it's coming from a radio, like the radio, it's diegetic. But so I'm diegetically explaining these details in a way that felt more natural, but it gave me the opportunity to explain the things that someone who isn't too big of a fan or who hasn't read lit RPG wouldn't know. So they wouldn't know what, like, my, 'cause my friends, I when I was working on the blurb with my with Portal, I sent it to some of my friends to see what they thought about it, and they were just like, one of the comments was, oh, what's the system? You seem to be like capitalizing, it seems to be a special thing, but it's not explained. And in the blurb is like, it's going to be much more blurb. It's going to supposed to track more of like the readers who are already in the genre. Yeah. But in the intro, I specifically explain what the system is because people on Earth aren't going to know what that is when they're pulled into it.
You're always struggling a little bit, like everyone does, with like how much do we explain? Because as a lit RPG reader, I don't need to like know what the system is for like 50 times. But at the same time, I do think that for other people to come in, it's actually kind of cool. And it's a hard struggle to kind of, because in a system isekai, it's not a system apocalypse, you kind of have to explain it at the beginning, right? Because the people do not know it, exactly as I said. So you need let me flex my master's degree here. Intradiegetic, homodiegetic narration. Sometimes it might also be extradiegetic, homodiegetic, but we'll see. Anyway, enough flexing. No, like you need that. And it's hard because sometimes, what do? You have to have it, and you have to have it. Sorry, again, edit. You have to have it, and it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I think what worked for me is that I was able to do it a bit more naturally because a major plot point for the book and the series as a whole is that the system isn't just like there. It wasn't always there. It was created by the Eldritch being named Dave. Like, it created the system. So it's part of, able to explain it because it's such a major part of it. And it's a little bit different in the fact that it's not like the thing that's creating the magic. It's just, adding a numerical system to it, and it's helping things move a bit easier, but it's not the creator of the magic system. So yeah, I was able to explain it because
it's just the thing that David Life. It's just a thing that David Life.
I think I'm missing this one here.
Dave. Because the entity is called Dave.
Yeah.
It Dave it life. See, if you're listening to this on audio, Jothis is having a meltdown, and my goal has been achieved. He took off his glasses.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that was it's right there. Yeah, he really did. I wish I used that.
You can. You totally can. I recently I gave one to Raven's Dagger, which he might use. So we'll see.
That's one of those fun things about knowing authors is that when they like add you in a very weird way, or they just like reference you somehow, like in Peter Lee's the third book of the Dear Spellbook.
Yeah, Peter, awesome.
Mm-hmm. I'm just a dead cultist in there, and so it's just fun to being able to like show people like the audiobook of like, oh yeah, hey look, it's me, and it's just oh this dead cultist. And I could also officially say that like Travis Baldry said my last name, so that's something
nice. I mean, Quest Academy famously is full of writers. Every single professor is a writer. Yeah, like it's really funny to have a guy walking in called Lars Machmüller, the guy, Danish guy. It's crazy. And then you have a Jazz in there, like, Brian, really? It's like you're not even trying to use a random name generator. You're just going through your edit. It's like you're not even trying to come up with like random names. You're just going through your Rolodex, which I thoroughly appreciate. But I know for a fact that at some point, like you, I will end up as like a dead cultist or like an ugly demon or something like that. I just know it's going to happen.
The very notable one of those was the newest dungeon crawler Carl, because it was like one of the character there in there. I think the full name was like the author this, and I think it was a stripper too. So it added on to it, and it was just referencing a friend. Like it's just fun because it's one of those things where it's fun if you're in the know, but if you're not in the know, it's just like. Huh, okay, move on.
Matt Dinneman is a person I never want to cross. I think his entire third book is dedicated to a guy who gave him 0.5 stars, and he just completely rips into the guy in the nicest way possible. it's so good.
Yeah, like that's kind of coming back to like that. Like I wish I was at a point where like that wouldn't sink. Like sink me kind of deal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, part of it is, I think, just how you promote yourself as an author.
Fair enough.
So Matt Dinneman is often seen like playing a bass guitar. He's a rock star. He does that. That's fine. I don't think, for example, that if this came from Shirtaloon, that wouldn't have worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I know it gets very iffy when iffy as an action, like the perceived actions of just whenever any authors move into the more like the sphere that the readers are in.
Yeah.
Cause there's so many just stories coming out.
It's a power imbalance. And it's starting to happen to me because I just probably by this podcast comes out, I've crossed 1,000 followers on YouTube. Or subscribers or whatever, and people kind of know my name, and you know, people poke me on Discord, and I'm starting to realize that I knew this before, anyway, there's a power imbalance, right? Because these people know a lot about me that I don't know about them, and that is cool because apparently I'm interesting, or at least tolerable. I talk to interesting people. But on the other hand, it's also a bit scary because they know a lot about things about me, and it makes it hard to have a conversation, right? So, I mean, you'll know once you hit it real big.
That's part of the whole parasocial situation of just it's a weird bound like line you have to kind of walk, because it's on one hand these people are funding your ability to do this.
Yeah.
But it's also like they don't truly know you. You don't truly know them unless you are someone who runs like a Discord or you do interact with the fans often, but
and even then, right? There's a reason why true connection can only happen with vulnerability, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite sure that lots of authors have things that they don't want to share with other people, right? Either because it's taboo or because it's like, I don't know, not necessarily taboo. I shouldn't say this. That's not the right thing to say, but because people are afraid, and that's human for everyone, that like, hey, if I really tell people that I like, for example, long walks, they might mm-hmm. think that I'm boring, or I like pottery, or, you know, carpentry. They're like, what the hell? At least I thought you were cool. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I really like pottery.
And then, yeah, then you have that, like, also the aspect of any type of art is a very exposing thing, because yeah. you're putting your thoughts and words down for everyone to read in some regards. Yeah. And it's how much it's hard to, because your art is a part of you in a large degree. And so then you are putting this in front of a bunch of people. What do you put in there? Do you like, what happens if, say, the wrong people hear this or stuff like that? And there's certain aspects of like, still a holdover of, there's a lot of, still a lot of, what's the word? Just negative connotation around talking about any disabilities or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes hard, 'cause like, whether it's right or not, but that can still negatively impact you. And even though it's this, because it's the whole thing of like, whenever you're job searching, it's like, do you list whether or not you have a disability on something on there?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, on one hand, yes, you get accommodations. However, that can still be a negative detractor. And that could be the same thing of when it comes to putting out a book, is do you tell people why you're writing what you are and why you chose this direction? Because it could be extremely personal, and it's just a very weird line to walk, where it's like, they see the outcome, but maybe not the why. And it's, how do you navigate that?
It's also hard, because sometimes you may want to write something that doesn't really fit in the book, right? So for example, you may know things about your characters that don't make it into the books. Like, for example, the fact that my main character, Samantha, I can say this here, I think, because as we talked about, the book isn't gonna be big anyway. And I hope I'll eat those words. So reverse jinx. It's gonna be nice. But she's a polyamorist, right? So I'm not gonna write that in the book. It's gonna be implied, maybe, but you can't do reverse harem in the RPG. Like, no, like reverse harem, quote unquote, but just in a whole different thing.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where there is an audience, but for certain things like that, there's also like almost a negative audience for that too. Of just, if there's any of those ideas that get in, it can really hurt the book. Because I know, like, I've explicitly written my main character to have ADHD. It's one of the things that I really like about Sanderson's writing, is that it's, those things are shown, and it's not,
he almost makes them magical.
Yeah, and it's, because it's like, I love that idea of the night, like any of the in Stormlight, people get their powers because they are broken. And that's a hard thing to sometimes write, because a lot, like, it's hard enough, and there's enough comments of where, like, it's bad for my character to not just murder everyone indiscriminately. So how are people going to feel when the character is neurodivergent and has to deal with those things?
I mean, yeah, like, also the other question of like, hey, if you can control his genes, why can't he just, you know, like, increase his dopamine feed drip, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same question if you're writing a psychopath, right? And you get system and magic healing. Why can't they, you know, heal his psychopathy.
And that's one, another one of those things I really like with how Sanderson handled it, is that it's not a lot, whether we like it or not, like those things are a part of us, and it's not that, it's not like damage, it's just how we're wired, and you can't heal the default state.
Isn't one of the like very first Knights Radiant, the new ones, isn't he like autistic or something?
The
Dalinar's son.
Dalinar's son. What is it? Relaine? Or is that one of the?
Yeah, it's been a while. Like I got the book here, but yeah. In general, we can agree that's the gist. Okay, so I actually meant to ask you one book that you love and why is it awesome, but we talked about so many of them. Do you have any more that you want to mention here? Because you mentioned Nether Die, but...
Yeah, I'm real bad with just singular, like, oh, like this book. I'm always like this series or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's... So I was thinking on that one a lot, and the one, it's going to be a different take because it's a comic book. Mm-hmm. But the one book that has a lot of meaning for me is one of the issues of Hellboy. I love Hellboy. Like, mm-hmm. I love Hellboy. I have.
Oh, cool. You're showing it too, right? So
It's on my, like, almost my entire arm of Hellboy. And it's nice. So I got this because, actually, this is just a better way to, there we go.
Oh, nice. Yeah, there you go. That's a very cool tattoo. A very nice line work.
Yeah, the artist I have is fantastic. He also did something. I have an entire shoulder piece too.
Oh, cool.
But that one is for the first book I ever wrote, because it was like, oh, hey, I finally did this thing I really wanted to do. And it was funny. I was getting this tattoo, and there was another guy there getting one from someone else. And he was like, oh, where can I go read it? I'm like, this is never going to see the light of day. It's so terrible. Yeah. it means a lot, but it's still crap. But
I have one of a goose. Because there's this poem by Mary Oliver that really helped me a lot when I was like super depressed, about wild geese, that I can really like, it's a wonderful poem. And mm-hmm. I just got myself a goose made of stars, because why not?
That's actually what I was going to get into with this, was that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I've loved Hellboy since I was a kid. I mm-hmm. really enjoyed the original movies. I'm going to make sure that's mm-hmm. very clear. The new one's crap, but that's anyways. I started reading when I was a kid, and like there's general things of like, oh, I bought the first comic, like my first Hellboy comic book with like my dad and my grandfather, who has since passed away, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But I decided in college, my junior year, that I was going to reread it, because it was like the main story was coming to an end, and I was like, okay, let me try to get concurrent again to catch back up. And on that pass, I reached the issue that is one of those things that's just really resonated with me, and it's so it's in Hellboy, the series that's in is called Wake the Devil, and it's the final issue. And the whole thing is, for backstory for anyone who might not know who Hellboy is, which probably a lot of people, but he is a half demon come to Earth who is supposed to bring about the apocalypse, but instead he gets raised by a essentially like a supernatural, like paranormal investigator, and helps protect the planet and protect humans and that kind of thing. And so his whole thing is that he is destined to destroy the planet. And there's a scene where he's about to die, and people say, I think it's just a group of demons were saying to him, is you have two choices. You either bring about, you live up to your destiny and you bring about the apocalypse, or you die. And that scene just goes, I actually have it written down because I want to get this right.
Nice.
Yeah, because I was, yeah, so it's, screw you, I choose door number three, it's my goddamn life, I'll do what I want with it. And this came at a point where I was struggling through a lot of like mental health issues, of learning new stuff about myself, and that really had to change my perspective. And it just hit at the right moment when I needed it of just, know what? No, this is my life. There are things going on, but I can choose what I do with it.
That's cool. I
was already a huge fan before, but that moment was just what I needed to hear, and so then I got that.
That's nice. It's always awesome. Like, and yeah, I guess that kind of goes to show, right? Art matters.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm not gonna go into an AI diatribe here. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Shout outs.
I already kind of got into the biggest, the one I really want to shout out, which was Peter Hackshall's The Nether Day series. I cannot say enough how much I love that series. I have already waxed poetic about how much I love the prose and how great it's written, but I still, it is so beautifully written, and it feels, it's something that you don't get to see a lot in the genre. Mm. And the book two deserves to be in a much higher spot than where it's at. It's just so amazingly well written. And my cat's saying hello. Any issue, like anytime I can say for people to read a series, it's always going to be that one, because it's so good. And then it's funny because a lot of the series that I would recommend are like bigger than me, so it feels weird to be like, oh, check this out, but I'm like,
it's fine. I mean, this is also the part where people who listen to the podcast can, you know, get new recommendations or get new stuff to learn or learn about new series. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
But then probably one book I really like that I haven't seen very many people recommend is Titan Hoppers by Hayes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that series. So I very rarely read anymore, like outside of like, so Audible, I use Audible, but I physically reading, I don't do very much because that time is I need it to write. But that series I read and binged in a couple days. And anytime there's a book series that pulls me strong enough to kind of like do at the detriment of other stuff, it always feels extremely notable.
Yeah, I read that on, I think on a flight. Very, very good. The world building is excellent. I personally feel as though the progression was like a bit too long, and I've felt like, hey, when's the progression coming in here? But when it did, it was actually pretty good. So it's definitely not enough for me not to recommend reading the book. It's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a little on the slower side, so I put it more in like the Brandon Sanderson side of fantasy, where it's slow build.
It is definitely more fantasy than it is progression fantasy.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, because everything else would be spoilers, but still, it's a very good series.
Mm. I've got like three more that I just quickly jotted down, but there's the To Flail Against Affinity by J.P. Valentine. The series of Stargazer's War, I really like that. Mm-hmm. That's another one of those where the writing felt more like it was the prose was a major consideration in when it and okay. how it was done. And I as just as an author and a writer, I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then even though it's a bigger series or a bigger author, but it's a smaller series that he done, but I really liked Underland by Max and J. Durand. I went and looked on Amazon, and it has like, I think the first book has 150 ratings, and I'm like, it's crazy to me. I think it's really well done, and it also has body horror and that kind of power set, so yeah. I am biased in that regards, but yeah.
You don't really hear about Underland. Like, you hear about Kaitos maybe sometimes. Blood and Fur, obviously, which is like really big right now, and Commerce Emperor. But yeah, it's strange that you don't hear about Underland, because the cover is really good and everything else is all about us also, you know, screams good fun. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, because that's one of the ones I don't have many, but that's one of the physical copies that I bought, just because I enjoyed it so much.
Oh yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm gonna let him know. Cool. Well, in that case, I think we're reaching the end of the podcast.
Yeah. That so quick.
I mean, yeah, it's 2 hours, 3 minutes. We are going to keep going a little bit on Patreon, and we did already discuss a lot of Patreon beforehand. So if you want to listen to more stuff, it's on the Patreon. Go check it out. Yeah, people like it a lot. I've been getting lots of positive comments, which is really nice. And other than that, yeah, I think next week we're going to have Plum Parrot, which is going to be super nice. So I hope you're looking forward to that. And also, we are going to be hosting a third or even fourth. No, wait. Yeah, I think a fourth round table soon. And the topic is going to be great, but I don't quite know which one we'll take because I haven't recorded the third yet. So, awkward. But go check that out too. It's going to be nice. Anyway, Josh, any last words? Yep. Cool. All right. Keeping in the spirit of this podcast. Well, in that case, thank you so much for listening and or watching, and I will see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.